library services, is that not correct? So, at the other end, is that right? Yes. But we've just got minutes to do, please. And they've only just arrived. I see Honourable Tierko is, she was here, but she's just popped out. All right. So, we can proceed. The minutes of the 9th of May, the 24th of May and the 14th of June. On the minutes of the 9th of May, we had a number of people present. The issue was the National Empowerment Fund and its strategic annual performance plans, etc. Page 1. This is a bit difficult for the DA per se, because your colleague isn't here, who had been, you know, because of the changeover. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Of those who were present, can we have someone to propose the adoption? Honourable Mantash, seconded by the Honourable Williams. Thank you. The 24th of May. That was quite a few present there again. Page 1. Page 2. Page 3. We have somebody to propose adoption. Honourable Williams, seconded by. We have no one here who is second. What objection do you have, Honourable MacPherson? Say it with a minute. Been a correct reflection? I beg your pardon? Right, I will note that you're not seconding. And you know why? Because if you don't have an objection to an accurate reflection of the minutes, they should not be used to play other issues. Right. Honourable Tierko, are you prepared to second the minutes?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. The minutes of the 14th of June, page 1, page 2, page 3. We have someone to propose adoption. Honourable Tierko, seconded by the Honourable Williams. June the 27th. Page 1. That was a very interesting one with the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development on the proposed debt relief policy. Page 2. Page 3. I would like to suggest that you keep these minutes handy. Those of you who keep them in your computer, that's even better, because I'm sure they will be coming back on the matter of debt relief. We have someone to propose adoption. Honourable Honourable Williams.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, if you look at the back, the attendance register hasn't been filled in because it wasn't circulated. So I think that we should remind the staff that we need these attendance registers to be circulated so we can actually sign that we've been at work today. Because there is sometimes we use our attendance from the attendance registers in our tax, when we do our tax returns. And now this one says that even though it's all tick, 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 we were here, but it isn't signed because they didn't circulate it. They need to wake up the secretariat.
Allow me to say one thing, and I don't regularly defend staff on admin matters. But the reality that day is they did not have printer available to them, and I could not help out myself. I had no toner. But you should prepare these registers in advance. I'm trying to see who was the committee secretary on that day. Was yourself, Mr. Medema? And you should take note of the point, the criticism being made here. We can allow members to sign because these are legal documents required by SARS, those of you who do use them to reflect your attendance, which you have to do, I understand, nowadays. Is there anyone who objects to that proposal? No. So please make sure they are signed. And don't allow that to happen again. Yes. Honourable Williams, with that done, amended.
I move that we adopt the...
With the
amendments that you've suggested.
Seconded by Honourable Muntush. The Honourable Muntush has asked to just be excused during this round. She's only just got back from medical leave and is not completely better. So during the course of whatever arrangement can be made. Thank you. Can we continue then? My apologies to South African Bureau of Standards. The South African Bureau of Standards was concerned that they had not had the opportunity to note what it was that they had wished to say. Normally the minister would still be here, but unfortunately he has requested to leave earlier, and I think we're all aware why this is the case. But he does get these recordings, and I can assure you if he's in his office, he's watching you. So I think the time has come for us to ask you. It is Dr. Moshlema Kulu is it, the Chief Executive Officer, but you've also got Ms. Masako, the ex-corporate services, and Mr. Plykees. Is that right? Yes, go ahead.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, and DG. We appreciate the opportunity to present our annual report and our quarter one performance. Just to clarify the issue pertaining to, I guess, the summary of the Auditor General and the statements about the entities that are always problematic in terms of the audit. I would have hoped that either the DG or the Minister would engage with the issue that the SABS over the last 5 years has obtained a clean audit, and we've led the clean audit revolution in the DTI family, and that we are engaging with the Auditor General, but the CFO will engage with us on the reasons they're giving for taking the clean audit this year. It's the reason that was given here and that has been given to our shareholder, the department, are not the reasons that are in our management letter. So the issue of the change of the standard is not in our management letter, and so we're engaging with the AG about the messaging around that. We've never gotten a qualified audit in the last 8 years since I took office, and so it was quite unfortunate that we are put in that category with the comments from some of the members as entities that from the reporting and the messaging that at the bottom. And in order for, I guess, our results to be understood, I think it's important, even though this is the platform where the decisions are made, to go back to, and it wasn't this administration that made these decisions. It was the state where our country was, where we were, where our economy was opening up, and we were creating an environment that is going to incentivize investment, and there were talks in the public space across government departments for privatization of some of state entities. So This is the environment within which the policy directive for SABS services to be deregulated was taken through NetLab platforms, and the business community was engaging with the need for an SABS that has a Chinese wall. And so in 2004, that policy was put in place. In 2005, SABS Commercial was established, and again, this was out of WTO changes in the developed world, mostly adopting a Chinese wall methodology. So the standards development became the statutory part of the SABS that's mandated by government to develop and maintain standards for South Africa. And the other parts of the SABS were then functions that the organization had inherited, and that was allowed by the legislation to continue with. The SABS gets a grant from government, and it accounts for 24% of our budget, and it covers mostly the statutory responsibilities. And it's important that I explain these statutory responsibilities because they affect issues of trade as well globally. So the grant covers the operational expenses of the standards division mostly. But there is standards work in the region, in SADC, standards work that happens in the continent, and standards work that happens in international platforms. All of that and the participation of our industries in those platforms is funded through this grant. The SABS represents South Africa in ISO and in IEC, and our membership fees are covered by the grant, and the participation, which is not just the SABS employees, but industry and other stakeholders participate, and we subsidize their travel. It remains an important strategic engagement that is funded by the grant, and the SABS is grateful to our government that we continue to play an important role in ISO and IEC because of this grant. On the other side of the line is then what's termed SABS Commercial. And today it's seen as the SABS's own doing to put these as commercials, but it was something that was motivated mostly by industry. If I'm not mistaken, the SABS is the only DTI agency that competes in an open market. The others generate revenue, but it's a statutory role, and they don't have competition. Our competition is mostly not local. It's companies that are well-resourced from the developed world. Most of them are German. There'll be French companies, and of late there is the British organization, BSI, and they come with lots of resources, and they can invest in the infrastructure. They're from the developed world, and so they bring the resources to compete with the SABS. The SABS infrastructure was built in 1972, and I think it was around the late 1990s when there was a discussion about the recapitalization of that infrastructure that then the private sector indicated that they were willing to invest, and so that government must deregulate the dependence, remove the dependence on the SABS infrastructure. All of that is documented in policy documents that were discussed in NetLeg. And so there is a need at this stage of our economy where the growth is really dependent on this infrastructure that we relook that policy directive. It's been encouraging engaging with the department on the policy stance, in that there is an intention to really review this policy stance of a commercial role of the SABS and where SABS competes using a 1972 infrastructure to give services to the economy. We've recently, just again on the role of the SABS, we've recently witnessed the Competition Commission engaging with a number of levers in the economy that distort the market. And it was for the first time in August that the Competition Commission took a decision to rate companies on the basis of standards. And these were companies that are in the fire equipment industry, and one of the companies had taken the SABS to court earlier last year because the SABS did not want to test to their specific requirement. The court then indicated that we had not given them enough time, but did not engage with the substance of the issue. What the Competition Commission then did, because that was out of the complaint that we stopped testing for this group of companies, and it was also out of the engagement with the Competition Commission. But in August this year, they then raided those companies because they were, from their side, the finding was that they were manipulating the standard, but also that they were testing to their specific requirement, excluding the others, in violation of the Consumer Protection Act that says products will meet the South African national standard, or standards developed in line with the Standards Act and applicable regulations. So these are issues of policy development that we're engaging with, and we are hoping that we will get to then move forward on those. 76% of our budget are then paid out of these services, and the services, as I indicated, are given in the open market, and we compete with mostly foreign entities in this engagement. Of late, we've been engaging within the continent about the phenomenon that is called the Scramble for Africa, and how standards and conformity assessments are used as gateway to Africa, and how, as entities, if we don't engage with our role and the role that we have in protecting our own companies and players in the market, that we become levers, standards become levers that are used to dominate our markets and to take out the local players that will not have the facilities to test. So we run an organization that have these two phases that we prescribed in the policies, Jim. But in all of the areas, we then apply we've applied this since 2010, the balanced scorecard, where we balance our commercial endeavors and the endeavors to grow what we do for the country in line with our customer engagements. And we measure our productivity, and we put great emphasis in developing our people and giving them opportunities and exposure to overseas laboratories and standards development organization overseas. And we measure that as we report to our shareholders. The number of developments that the CFO is going to engage with that we can report on for 2016-2017, and she will then take us through the performance against the set indicators.
Thank you, Chair. Greetings to the Chairperson, the members of the committee, and DG and all our representatives from the DTI. In terms of our highlights for 2016-2017, SABS achieved 9 out of 11 of its key performance indicators, which I will go into detail. We also, as the SABS group, we have had a clean audit for the past five years, one of the first entities within the DTI cluster to achieve clean audit and maintain that. Unfortunately, in this specific year, we did not achieve a clean audit, but we achieved a clean audit for our SABS commercial business, which is 75% of our activities. Now, just to clarify, because I think, you know, when the Auditor General said that we didn't get a clean audit because we moved from GRAP to IFRS, I was quite surprised because we've never been on GRAP. SABS has been on SA GRAP, and the Accounting Standards Board gave a directive to discontinue SA GRAP, and as state-owned entities, we had the option to either move into IFRS or move into GRAP. But because we were already on SA GRAP, and it was a much easier transition to move on to IFRS, that's the statement that the accounting framework that we then early adopted as the SABS. Now, what is key to highlight is that the accounting statements, you know, applicable to SA to IFRS and SA GAAP are the same that relate to the error that the Auditor General picked up. Just to highlight, the error related to our intercompany transactions, our interdivisional and intercompany transaction, both for the disclosure of our intercompany transactions with our commercial division and revenue and expenses within SABS. So the error that was picked up was within SABS. It didn't have an impact on the profitability of the SABS. It didn't have an impact on the group financials that were submitted. But it is the, you know, it is the view of the Auditor General that the you know, the error picked up was material enough to, you know, to then for them to then conclude on an unqualified audit with findings. Another key highlight within the SABS was a new thermal test chamber that was built, and this is actually a donation through the DTI from GIZ, a German company. SABS bid for that work and won the tender, and this is a new testing line or service that will be offered for refrigeration trucks. Next slide. I think the low lights that we, you know, that we had for this financial year, unfortunately we had a further grant reduction of 68 million, while in the prior year we had 45 million. And, you know, this then saw us, you know, getting into a net loss position of 44.4 million. We also had a very long...
little clarification as you're going along there. That was slide 5 you're referring to now, the parliamentary grant.
Yes.
I am just going to get that clarified for myself. I wasn't aware that Parliament made these grants. But go ahead.
Yeah, it's the allocation that we get from National Treasury. Yes, it's the grant that we get from our shareholder. Okay. In addition to that, for, you know, 7 months of the year, we had, you know, an unwarranted SANAS suspension that actually, you know, negatively impacted our revenue, our growth as the SABS, and also our reputation. You will see that when I present the financial performance, you know, this, you know, the decline in revenue really, you know, impacted our baseline revenues. We, based on this financial information, we didn't meet our budgeted revenues for the year, and one of the key things is it's been a very tough economic environment that we have experienced, and also the the SANA suspension didn't assist at all, because that ate into our revenue base. We, with this current revenue environment and the reduction in the grant, we've had to manage our costs quite tightly, as the South African Bureau of Standards, as you would see, which is not on the on the slide, that we actually had our costs increasing by less than 5%, which is way below CPI. So we actually try as much as possible to enhance our financial sustainability as an organization by managing our costs tightly. We've had the benefit of our investment portfolio that has generated income for us above budget. And when we look at the reduction, the impact of the reduction in the government grant of 59, that's net of VAT, we would have been in a profitable position. Now, on the predetermined objectives agreed for the 2016-2017 year, as I've already highlighted, we did not meet our revenue target and our operating profit target, and that's mainly due to the SANA suspension. And I actually forgot to highlight that has a ripple effect on other bodies that are creditors, which is RVA and FSSC, which are international organizations, and also the backlogs that we experience in our certification division and the gaps in our testing infrastructure. On the issue around product lines, we then launched two new training programs, ISO 45001 and ISO 50001, one focusing on health and safety and the other one on energy management system. So we then met the target for two service lines. In terms of what we support in terms of our SMMEs and entrepreneurs, we actually exceeded target there, and this is mainly the work that is done by our Design Institute and our SMME division within SABS. In terms of our automation, we exceeded our target because we actually managed to automate our accreditation process and also our certification process. From the implementation of the SABS properties strategy, we had a feasibility study conducted as approved by the Minister of Trade and Industry, and that was concluded by year end. In terms of our Standards Action Plan, implementation of the Standards Action Plan, aligned to national imperatives, we had actually targeted to meet 50% of that plan, and we achieved 65%. And we also, managed to then, close, the gaps that we had targeted to close to support our certification business. We then, employed the number of technical employees that have completed specialist training with leading partners, that is globally. We had targeted 5, we achieved 6. And number of doctoral and master's graduates recruited into the knowledge hub sectors in support of testing and standards development, we met the target. So this is just an overview of us meeting our targets for the 2016-2017 year. Now, presenting the performance for the 2017-2018 first quarter, we're currently sitting at a net loss position of 11.9 million, and and slightly behind with our revenue targets. We are targeting. We actually are doing much better than what we had, you know, envisaged from the budgeting, because we had, you know, budgeted about, you know, 28 million loss, and for the year we're looking at 52 million. But as an organization, we do strive to do better from a performance perspective. In terms of our indicators, we've not achieved a revenue target, and this is obviously the implications of the final suspension. What I'd like to highlight is that we have a 3-year relationship with our customers, and that's like once you've lost that cycle, you know what to get into it is then going to be, you know, another 3 years. We've exceeded target of our operating profit position, which we are targeting at break even, and that is before depreciation and non-operating expenses. Now, in terms of new product service lines, it doesn't look like we have a target here, but we have an annual target of 2 service lines, and we are expecting to, you know, achieve that. We are on track to achieving our annual target. In terms of our support for SMMEs, and entrepreneurs, we actually did not. We had targeted 0 for this quarter and achieved 6. So we are well on our way in achieving our annual target. For sector specific publications produced, we had targeted 1. We didn't meet that. However, these publications will be completed at the end of the financial year. Now, in terms of a percentage of standard development completed as per the IPEP plan that we have developed, we didn't envisage that we will, you know, meet, you know, we had targeted, you know, 0 for the fourth quarter, but we actually managed to achieve 27, and we are well on our way in meeting target for the financial year. Now, in terms of an unqualified audit opinion, that will then be assessed, and I think right now we're definitely working towards getting our clean audit, you know, our clean audit back. Number of laboratories that are profitable, we have targeted 45, and we've actually, you know, exceeded target at 55%. Now, in terms of the progress we made against the standard action plan, we've exceeded, you know, target at 66.1%. And then, you know, because we are currently going through our, you know, digitization transformation journey, ICT transformation journey, and that involves, you know, automating processes over a 3-year period. Now, for this specific quarter, we had, you know, budgeted 1%, which we met. And so, it's just one service line which we met that target for automation. Now, in terms of the progress against the implementation of the SABS property strategy, a key item that we're to achieve in the first quarter was actually to make a presentation to our board on the outcomes that has been delayed, because there's a few things that we need to iron out on action items and decisions that we require our board to make going forward. In terms of skills development and the number of technical employees that have completed specialist training, and we had targeted 5, we achieved 8, and in terms of our number of doctoral and master's graduates, our target was 0, and we actually managed to, you know, achieve 1. Now that brings us to a conclusion of our performance targets. I think in terms of other non-financial targets, we are very, very confident that we will definitely meet those for this financial year, and we will continue to strive to, you know, generate, you know, revenue and and close that gap. On the upcoming events, which we would like to highlight to the committee, is that we will have a conference on competition and standards, and that will coincide with the World Standards Day, and that's going to be held on the 14th of October. The World Standard Day is on the 14th of October. We'll also be hosting the SABS Jacaranda City Challenge race. We're going to have the ISO president attending, you know, this event. They will be coming through. And I also like to highlight that, you know, SABS is actually very much involved in ISO activities, with our CEO actually having a seat on the council. And we'd like to, you know, invite the committee members to you know, to make themselves available for that week, but a formal invitation will be sent. Thank you.
Thank you. Just before we get the engagement from the committee members, can you please, this has been raised before with all of the units and the department itself, the whole issue around verification, of which it was indicated by yourselves in writing at one point that this, just reminding us, this is an unfunded mandate that you have. Yet you have done some verification. So how has it, or who paid for it?
Thank you, Chair. And just for protocol on the issues of the events, through you, Chair, the letter DG has been sent to the Minister on the events, and to request the Minister to assist us in hosting the President of ISO, who for this term is from China. And from the steel industry, and then the president-elect from Canada will be joining us. We'll also have a gala dinner with government departments that have, over the last 20 years, continued to use SABS services to improve service delivery. We will also be launching on that Friday the program between the Jobs Fund and our Design Institute, where we've been able to get 60 million from the Jobs Fund to use our SME development instruments to create jobs in the economy. And all of those events are anchored in our IPEP as a strategy. So I just wanted to just close the loop with the DG. On the issue of verification, Honourable Chair, the instruments are available in the country, and the challenges have been well documented and covered in the media. And today we are fortunate that you know, our principal is here. We remain the instrument of the department, and you know, we will work in line with the department's mandate. And when public entities do not want to pay for their work, so where we've done the verification is because the public entity has seen the value to do the work, and they've paid themselves for the work. And just for the protection of the department, when this program started, it was a program that was going to be self-funding, and there were going to be instruments to enforce on the other side. So, without those instruments to enforce, as the Minister indicated earlier, it then is difficult, and any intervention from the department in terms of the funding will then be a change of the initial stance, which was that it was going to be self-funding with compliance monitoring and ensuring that the entities are held to account. So the unfunded mandate is, you know, not directed to the department per se, it's directed at the fact that it's expected, but the entities don't want to pay for it. Thank you.
Let me leave it there just for the moment. We will be coming back to it, especially as the NRCS is here, and one of some of the issues are linked to that. But what members should know that we have tried to get hold of the Auditor General's office, the two members who were here, so that we could bring them back. And if they're not available now today, they will have to come back and clarify the issue that has been referred to us. But two members themselves now. Honourable Tierco had her hand up first, Honourable Williams, Honourable McPherson, in that order.
Thanks, Chair. While sitting here, I think it looks like I'm having two reports. There is a report of the HG and the report of another internal audit, because the Auditor General has audited SABS, and the findings were communicated to the SABS. So they cannot come here and dispute unless they have a dispute that they have lodged with the Auditor General on the findings to say this we are not in agreement with. Then it means that process, you need to come back with a consolidated report yourself and the AG and present to us a report which is final, because now you are confusing us. You come here, you tell us 5 years you had a clean audit, 2016, 2017, you had an unqualified report. The Auditor General just said to us, there is a problem here in SABS. So what is it that you are trying to tell us? You are saying you are fine, the Auditor General are wrong with the findings that they have found on your report, or try to explain to us, because you were here when they presenting the report. And also to indicate on the issue of an infrastructure to say, if it's old, what is it that you want to, I don't know, you said about the structure which is old, 1972, when you're presenting on your report. So I want to get the intervention that you want to put in place as an entity to that. So thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Tierco. Honourable Williams.
Thank you, Chair. In your input, you were telling us about the economy and the unfunded mandate, and it's all about funding. But in the Auditor General's report, the things that they highlighted as problematic were things like oversight responsibility, things like effective HR management. These things have all dropped. From last financial year, they were in the green, and now these things are in the yellow. In fact, at the last year's Auditor General's report, which I've got with me, you only had two yellow squares out of the full amount, and now you've got nine yellow squares. So there's been a definite drop in things like financial performance and management, in leadership. All of these things have dropped, and I'd like to know what mechanisms are you putting in place to go back to green again from this yellow position. And I'd like to know in quite detail, because it seems to be quite a radical drop. It hasn't like you've dropped a couple of things. You've dropped like the majority of your where the Auditor General measures on has become a problem. For instance, you don't keep proper records anymore, whereas last year you kept proper records, and the Auditor General has said that this area is of concern now, and regular, accurate and complete financial and performance isn't happening. So I'd like to know, is this going to move now to red next year, or are you going to go back to green? Thank you.
McPherson.
Thank you very much. I'd firstly like to understand what the issue with SANUS exactly was, if you could please take us through that. And I think the reality is that the grant from government is going to continue to decrease. And so there needs to be a strategy or a plan in SAVS on how to mitigate against that. I think to rely purely on your investments is not going to suffice. So from yourself, I'd like to know, is there a plan in place? Is there a discussion in how to start picking up the shortfall? With respect to your strategic objectives, you know, I always get concerned, and I've said it for the last 3 years, that who determines these strategic objectives for the department? Because quite frankly, some of them are bizarre, to say the least. I'd like to, you know, focus on, number of sector-specific publications produced. I'm not sure that that's really, that's something that you should be doing anyway. It's not something you should, congratulate yourself for. That is, what the role of SABS should be doing. With respect to things like number of doctoral and master's graduates, why would you measure yourself on that? Why is that a specific strategic objective for yourself to be measured against? In your first quarter, you have... I'm just trying to have a look here. Number of service lines. Your target is 1%. So that's one. All right, that makes a bit more sense then. The percentage of laboratories that are profitable. Well, I would think that all of your laboratories should be profitable. You should be running this thing as a business. You are not in the space of doing these things, for good charity or goodwill. And the more profit that you generate is the less money that we have to give you, and we can spend it on other things. Your progress against the implementation of the Standards Action Plan against aligned to national imperative, who measures that? And how is that measured? What are the national imperatives that you believe are defined as such? And to be honest, I think, and it's something for all entities, Chairperson, I think that if they're going to set themselves, strategic objectives, I think a strategic objective would be something like, how do we generate more revenue to make up for the shortfall? That should be a strategic objective. Another strategic objective should be like, how do we improve verification amongst state-owned entities? That's a strategic objective. So I really would encourage you to re-look at your strategic objectives and actually measure yourself against things that can actually make a real difference. And I think that would go a long way to assisting this committee in dealing with the very real issues that we have, like what's going on in Transnet. You've heard that be spoken about a lot today.
Yes, there are just a couple of points, and that's why I said earlier I'm very glad that the NRCS is also here, as one says this. But in the NRCS annual report, some disagreements were referred to with regard to a contract disagreement in relation to the full and partial testing. And this seemed to relate also to the South African Bureau of Standards. Can the South African Bureau of Standards clarify this disagreement? The second point, I want to come back to the Auditor General and the point that is made in the printed report. Yes, you did have 5 clean audits before, but this one is there were certain statements there, but points made, but it was unqualified, which is still pretty good. Now, very simply, do you agree that it is an unqualified report, number one? And then am I right to understand it is not that you're disagreeing, the classification, you're disagreeing with what you believe are not factual reasons for the unqualification. Is that what you are, you'll have your turn saying, because that to me is very important. The second thing is the hrup and the gop and the gop, pee-pee and all of that. Yes, I want this done simply. We all know what gop is and hrup. But you made it really sound completely confusing. Why do you mention it unless you believe the Auditor General has mistakenly stated this? I mean, I want this clear now. We don't want to go backwards and forwards. So I think it's important. We have asked for the Auditor General to comment on this. They haven't responded, but we will get their response. Rest assured. Thank you. Now it's over to SABS.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I always say if you have to be defensive about your work, then you know there is a challenge. As a motto, I've always said to the team that our work must speak for itself, and you know we can't be taking time from important issues of the country defending you know issues that are you know factually you know in front of the committee. So the honourable chair's interpretation is a correct interpretation. So we regress of in the issues and the way the auditor general does the audit, they take a sample and they engage with the issues, and if there is regress on the issues, and in some of the issues, especially in the HR space, where we've had a change of executive, and there's somebody acting who is you know a lower level, including performance management at certain levels. Those are the issues that we are trying to resolve at the moment. So in terms of the Auditor General's findings and their report, we are not even the CFO and the team had plenty, how many months? Four months to engage with the Auditor General and dispute their findings. So that we are not going to do outside of that. It's just the reasons that we're giving to our shareholder and to this platform for us losing a clean audit that have not been given in the management letter, and even when we wrote a letter and asked, the reasons that we got from the Auditor General are not the reasons that were presented here today. That's as far as I'm aware, that will be the issue, and that will be clarified. And I've asked the CFO to follow up with them, and we did speak to the Auditor General's representative, because the person who's presenting is not the person that does the audit, so they can't talk to our issues. Then there was an issue about the 1972 infrastructure, and you know in a big a portfolio where there are a number of important trade and industrial development issues that they are engaged with. The infrastructure was a good of the nation at some point, and it was not a commercial infrastructure. And I do need to emphasize that, because that came as a change in 2004, where the market was then open to competition. So this was an infrastructure to assist the country to regulate the products in the country. The commercialization of that infrastructure is something that took effect from 2008. And if it's commercial, you know, then it has to operate within commercial basis. And sometimes it's commercial, and sometimes it's good of the nation. And it will be, good to get one clear directive about whether it's commercial or it's good of the nation, because it can be both. At the moment, it's both. It's commercial when we have to generate revenue in line with commercial terms. When we have to make choices about what we test and don't test, you can't make those choices because this is good of the nation. So it's difficult to then implement one strategy, commercial or good of the nation, if there is that confusion. The issues that have regressed, I've even seen our management letter, and the issues that have been raised, it's thicker this year than it was the previous year. So we are working on those action plans. One of the issue, when you have a change in executives that are responsible for the portfolios, you do get a change in terms of what has been put in place, because you have to allow the executives to also, you know, put their own stamp on it. And sometimes that would result in the changes not being, you know, good for the audit engagement. We don't know about the conflict with the NRCS, and I would apologize that I would not be able to engage on that conflict, because it's in their annual report. I have not engaged with the, I don't even have a letter from the CEO of the NRCS, acting CEO, that talks to that conflict. So it would be difficult for me to engage in that conflict, because I don't know what the bases are, and I have not engaged formally with them on that issue. The issue of the decreasing of the grant and what strategies are in place. You know, I think we all appreciate that the needs for the fiscus are plenty. And when you look at the balancing act that our government has to make in even making decisions about who's most deserving of a grant, it must be a very difficult decision. We at the SABS have the infrastructure and the property that in the split was then left with the SABS, that we've now gotten an agreement with the minister to leverage in order for us to then fund our activities. And we're working on that to leverage that infrastructure in order for us to be able to meet our increasing costs. The labs are not profitable because the pre-2008 they were not supposed to be profitable. They were good of the nation laboratories, and the journey has been to commercialize those laboratories. But one of the key inputs into those laboratories are people and employees that were in those laboratories that were supporting the regulator, that are still in the laboratories, that you can't retrench because you are suddenly commercializing or the entity is operating on a commercial basis. So we grow other services, like we in the last 5 years we've grown our certification revenue in order for us to subsidize the laboratories. It's never a... we can report profits, but it's not a desire from me as a CEO to report profits and put people home and leave them without jobs. So in this environment, we'll grow other revenue streams in order for us to make sure that we keep all of our employees employed, because the impact of it doesn't matter what level the employee is. Putting one person out of the job to make the labs profitable is something that I would have difficulty internalizing, you know, myself. So as a strategy, we balance the revenue from other areas to make sure that we can continue to support our laboratories until they can stand on their own and be commercial. I will allow the CFO to address the issues on the finances, and the SANAS issue. It's a difficult one, but we obtained a legal opinion. And on both instances where SANAS had suspended the SABS, and we have that legal opinion, and it's against that legal opinion that, you know, we say it has unwarranted. SANAS obviously will have their stand, and the difficulty is that, you know, it's entities that report to the same ministry, and it's difficult to then go prove this in court, but it's got a material impact on the SABS, and what we were highlighting is that material impact and the argument about who's right, who's wrong. I think that for us is secondary. It's the real impact where we've lost revenue. That is the issue for us. But we will happily make the legal opinions available if needed. But what we were raising as a concern is that the commercial strategy to create that revenue is then affected negatively when there are actions like these against the organization. CFO.
Thank you, Chair. I think just to add on to what the CEO said, in terms of the Auditor General, we're not disputing the outcome. We are just saying because they're saying we move from GRAP, to IFRS. And we just say, no, we were on SA GRAP and we moved to, yes, to IFRS. And the issue is that an error that was picked up on the accounting for intercompany transactions. So it is an error that had multiple implications at the SABS level and not at the group level. That's what we are then clarifying. Yes.
Well, that is a little bit clearer, you see, than before. But I know when you were responding, not all the members looked as if they were satisfied with the response. So I must just give them the opportunity to follow up and then conclude. I also have a clarification, but let's start with yourself, Honourable MacPherson, and Honourable Tierko, do you want to just dig deeper or clarify the issue you were not entirely happy with?
Thanks, Jess. I think what I propose to say, the AG and the SAB, they must just consolidate the report and give us the correct version of what is happening. Because if the other hand says something and the other hand says something, and they must find a common ground, both of them, instead of being here and speak different languages. So that's my take, Chair.
Yes, it is a very difficult one, that, because I think you even made reference to the people from the AG's office who are here today never did the audit. Now, we know that is the case. We know that is the case. But the inference was they don't know what's happening because the people who did this audit should know, and they don't know, and there's been this. And that is actually, it's quite a serious statement. Let me use the word statement. It is a very serious statement, you see. So we can't go forward on this. This will have to be addressed with the AG present right here. So when we go forward as a BRRR report, we go forward with everyone on the same page. But let me allow Honourable MacPherson, who's been very patient, just to come in there.
Yeah, just with respect to the strategic objectives, and also what plan is in place to make up for that lost grant funding. I think it's a really important discussion, and I hope that you'll speak to it on the second opportunity.
I think on just to maybe answer there, if you look at our keys, one of our strategic objectives for the prior year was to introduce new service lines, that is to generate revenue, and in the prior year there were two training programs that were introduced to support our training division. For this year as well, we do have a strategic objective to introduce new service lines and products. So that is a strategic objective that is there to actually, generate additional revenue.
Thanks. I appreciate the answer. I think it would be really helpful for this committee if you could provide us with a document and almost a business plan, as you like, on what those new lines are expected to generate, how you expect them to function in the market, and what those other new service lines are going to be. Because what I'd hate for us to be in the same position next year, and we're having the same discussion about, you know, we're going to introduce new service lines. I want us to actually track this thing from now until next year so we can assist you in making those service lines profitable and generating money for you to make up for that shortfall. So if you could just give us next 12 months what your new service lines and what you expect them to generate.
Shall we ask them to put this in writing to us? Yes. I think that would be best. And with respect to further engagement with the committee and ourselves, I think we've reached a point where we can't pursue this further without also having the AHE present. But if you can take cognizance of that, because it is a concern that you yourselves recognize the role of the statutory requirements and the mandate and what is funded and not funded, but you know that. And as the Honourable Macpherson is saying, let's get the business plan from yourselves to spell out strategically the way forward in this regard. Can we leave it there with the South African Bureau of Standards? And I'm just taking a rain check on where we are with the timing, etc. But if the National Regulator for Compulsory Services could come forward. Yes?
I think could we just take some form of a little break just to grab some lunch? I don't think that we've done
that.
That's
what I'm also looking at, not turning it into a big shindig. But I was going to ask the South African Bureau of Standards not to leave, because one of the questions will be, because you've made it clear you don't know what's going on, yet this is in the report of the National Regulator for Compulsory Services. So we can't have one entity. I believe you're both in the same building or very close by, not being able to communicate. You know, it worries me. I mean, do we have to now resort to the social pages? No. So you're going to come across here. The South African Bureau of Standards will still be here. Or can they talk from where they are, Ms. Naidu? No, they have to come here. You have to come along here for the purposes of getting it over here. All right? That's the National Regulator for Compulsory Standards. The SABS can just shift down one to the other side of the DG, October. Right. Sorry. Whoa. I said rain check here, and then you ran out. No, just one moment. I took your point seriously, but there is the issue of this one little thing in which, printed in one report, it says, it refers to a contract that they had a disagreement with SABS over. SABS knows nothing about it, we've just heard. So we want them to just address that. Then we're going to grab our lunch and come back. Right.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Good afternoon, Honourable Members and DG. Just to clarify the issue of partial versus full testing, the executives of both entities have been engaged. The issue has not been formally escalated to me as the CEO. Okay. The issue has not been formally escalated to me as the acting CEO or to the CEO of the SABS. It was resolved at the executive level where the two executives engaged and we finally concluded an SLA with SABS to deal with the issue of partial testing. There was a period of time where SABS taken a policy to stop partial testing. They have taken a decision to stop partial testing. That had an impact on us as the regulator because we test to the compulsory specifications, the mandatory requirements of the compulsory specifications, whereas SABS wanted to test for the full standard. That was the principal issue that led to the disagreement. But we eventually concluded an SLA with SAFS and the issue was resolved.
Maybe I could ask you just for a quick clarification, Acting CEO Mamadisa, who are the two executives?
The executive from my side was Mr. Bongani Kanyile, who was liaising with SAFS. And I think he was liaising with the executive testing in SAFS. I can't remember the name, but I was briefed about the issue.
We'll get a quick response from SAFS, but in my opinion, you can see how things go wrong when you don't communicate it further down the level and you put it in your report. And you use that name. But the people who are going to come here, the CEO, don't know what's going on. That's a breakdown in communication, no matter which way you want to look at it. Yes.
I also do want to clarify the huge misunderstanding about the issue of partial testing. So the SABS in its 1993 legislation, which was changed in 2008, had all the powers to act expediently. There are three different clauses that says you will test, you will conduct your business as you deem expedient. And in a legal opinion that the department got, those clauses were deemed unconstitutional because of the powers that it gave to the entity. But the practices that came out of that ability for the organization to act expediently was that we can test this in line with that. We are protected by the overarching regulatory law that we had. So when the regulator then moved out of the SABS, the legislation, the statutory part is standards. The other part is conformity assessment. But there is then a further legislation that was passed the same year, which is the Consumer Protection Act. In that act, there is a specific clause that says the products in the country must meet standards that are developed in line with the Standards Act or applicable regulations. So the regulator's needs are fully catered for if we have the capacity. If we don't have the capacity, we don't have the capacity because the infrastructure is old. But the aim of the 2008 legislation or the 2004 policy was to open up that investment, and the assumption by the business then was that there'll be investment in the laboratory infrastructure by private entities, and so the dependence on the SABS will not be there. And so we test what we can test, but in line with the framework of the legal instruments that we are subjected to.
Now, this is where we're going to go, because we're going to go to lunch now and we need to engage on this. We would like a written report on that from yourself, from both the NRCS and SABS, so that we've got it in front of us, and when we call back others, and we will be calling you back, we can take this further. Because now you can see some of the challenges that arise when an element of communication breaks down. We don't really know what that was directly. But let me leave it there for the moment. We're taking a working lunch. So please, it's now nearly 25 past one. Let's get back in 7 minutes. Thanks.
One question.